This year, we have a multi-billion dollar deficit.
For the past 16 years, without interruption, the people of Pittsfield have put their trust in me.
I look forward with great enthusiasm for the next 4 years.
Hi there, it's WAMC's Associate News Director Jim Lavula sitting in for Ian Pickus. On this episode, New York lawmakers prepare to head back to Albany and the mayors of Pittsfield and Springfield, Massachusetts start new terms. But first, we continue to follow the reactions to the stabbings of five people at a Hanukkah celebration in New York's Rockland County in late December. As the Ramapo community tries to heal after the machete attack at a rabbi's home, residents and lawmakers strive to find a path forward. WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn reports that path includes smoothing relations between the Orthodox Jewish community and other groups and lawmakers.
When U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand convened a roundtable December 30th to speak out against anti-Semitism following the stabbings, a number of religious and community leaders were at the table. New Square Mayor Israel Spitzer said the attack on the Jewish community had been in the making for several years, arguing that numerous leaders had been trying to spur dialogue to prevent such violence. Spring Valley Deputy Mayor Asher Grossman says elected officials have ignored the propaganda created from within the county on social media and in local political campaigns. He told Gillibrand it's time to stop the divisive speech and rhetoric and bring communities together. Abe Glassman is the head of an organization that represents 1,300 kids in the community's private schools. Glassman, who participated in the roundtable, says underlying politics fueled the attack, and he believes elected officials should condemn these types of verbal attacks as well as violent ones.
When you have a stabbing or you have a shooting, obviously everybody in the right mind is going to come out and condemn that. But when you have people running on platforms, we will stop those people. And when you say those people, everybody understands it means those Jewish people. Even if it's not specifically said, we will not let them take over our community. Who is them taking over our community? Obviously, we understand this means I wouldn't say outright Semitism, but it definitely there are people who take it as rise of anti-Jewish votes. And we do definitely believe that it is the elected officials that have to condemn these attacks.
The key is direct engagement.
On New Year's Eve, Republican Rockland County Executive Ed Day visited the home of Rabbi Chaim Rotenberg, where the December 28th attack occurred, along with other local leaders.
The one thing I said to him is very simple. Look, we have differences, and it's okay to disagree on matters of policy, but we need to keep the conversation at a level where it's respectful. And that starts by people learning about each other. And I was very clear that we here in Rockland County Human Rights Commission has done a number of forums, and most notably the ultra-Orthodox and Hasidic community is absent. And I said, that has to change. I said, we're willing to take steps forward to encourage understanding, but we need everybody at the table. And it's disheartening when we see people of all different colors, all different religions, save one, coming to these events. So that was heard, and I'm very hopeful that our next event, which I believe will be in March, will be better attended. And once we get to know each other better, there's always a better chance that we'll be able to understand each other better. And that really is the key. Ignorance breeds hatred.
And hatred, he says, brings on attacks such as the Muncie stabbings. Orange County resident Grafton Thomas has been charged with federal hate crimes in the attack. Authorities say he had handwritten journals containing anti-Semitic references and had used his phone to look up information on Hitler and the location of synagogues. Thomas's attorney, Michael Sussman, requested that Thomas, who he maintains has a history of mental illness, undergo a mental health evaluation. Sussman had released a statement on behalf of Thomas's family, saying Thomas has no known history of anti-Semitism. Since the Muncie attack, there has been vandalism in Westchester County at two churches and a theater, plus a menorah was knocked down at Veterans Commemorative Park, all in the town of Yorktown. Reporting from WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College, I'm Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn.
New criminal justice reform laws took effect in New York on January 1st, including the elimination of cash bail for misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies. Law enforcement officials and legislators statewide are calling for a review of the changes, and State Attorney General Letitia James added her concerns while speaking with reporters in Rochester over the weekend.
I can remember Rockefeller drug laws where we complained about the lack of judicial discretion. And so here we are now, again, with the lack of judicial discretion, and I would hope that the legislature would go back and revisit bail reform.
James, a Democrat, says she also anticipates issues with new changes to the discovery process. Prosecutors are now required to turn over discovery information within 15 days after an arraignment. James said law enforcement officials and district attorneys would need to hire more staff in order to comply with the new requirements. She would like to see the state provide additional resources to address both bail and discovery reforms. On Monday, Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo defended bail reform, but said the legislature will make adjustments this session.
Because there are consequences that we have to adjust for.
And with New York lawmakers set to return to Albany on Wednesday for the start of the new legislative session, 109th District Assemblywoman Pat Fahey sat down with WAMC's Capital Region Bureau Chief Dave Lucas for a preview of what's ahead. The Democrat says she anticipates a lot of challenges on a host of issues.
This year we have a multi-billion dollar deficit, especially in the Medicaid healthcare area, and that's very sobering and very challenging, and that kind of casts a shadow over a whole host of things that we very much need to do, be it in healthcare in general, especially mental health, given some of the horrific incidences over the last few weeks, if not last few months, especially with regard to our religious community. There's a lot of mental health challenges. There's always the education challenges. There's lots of needs to implement criminal justice reform. So there's a lot of needs, funding needs, and yet we have a multi-billion dollar deficit.
You've been active. You've sponsored, it seems like, tons of bills. What were some of the more successful ones?
Well, there's been a variety. Let me start with gun control. I've been I was a founding member of the New York Legislators Against Gun Violence. And incredibly pleased that New York really is leading the country now in terms of gun control. And I have a bump stock bill that banned bump stocks. So that was a positive piece that we are making inroads. That said, we can't be vigilant enough. And I'm pleased that the governor is now introducing a new package on gun measures. With regard to climate change, I think we by the skin of our teeth, we passed historic climate change, climate leadership, and Community Protection Act, and I have a whole host of bills that will go along with that, some of which have already passed, which includes electric vehicle infrastructure, mapping it out around the country, around the state. But I have a few more bills to encourage electric vehicles and a lot more that we need to be doing in transit. But then I also did a master trails plan for the state to encourage alternative transportation. I'm very pleased the governor signed it. We have an Empire State Trails plan that's about to open up. It will be the longest in the country, and we need to talk about connectivity issues throughout the state, which for me, it's a lot more than biking or hiking or walking. It is very much about walkable communities, pedestrian safety, and foremost, and that is economic development.
787 made some headlines. What is your plan exactly, and how likely is it to go forward?
One of the key ways to revitalize upstate New York has been restoring or reclaiming our urban cores, and that is always driven by waterfronts. We thankfully, we've seen the governor find the money to help take down some highways in Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse. I've said, let's add on Albany and let's do a serious feasibility study, which is an engineering study with cost estimates of what it would take for us to reimagine, if not reclaim, the waterfront in downtown Albany where 787 is right now. That doesn't mean you can completely eliminate it, but there are ways to reimagine it, maybe make parts of it a boulevard, and really reclaim what was critical waterfront decades ago. And that is, again, I propose these things not just because of walkable communities. It is the economic development aspect of it. That brings in more housing, more millennials in particular. It brings in tourism. It just, it's a win-win-win when you can reclaim those waterfronts, as we've seen in so many other cities around the country, let alone upstate New York.
When it comes to transportation and the livable, walkable community, there's one thing that stands out in my mind, and probably a lot of other people's as well, is the e-bikes and the e-bike legislation that vetoed by the governor. So what's your plan on bringing that back, if you have a plan?
A great question. I'm a top co-sponsor of that bill that Neely Rosick carries. The veto was disappointing. However, the governor, I read the veto message. I think there's room to negotiate that, and that's e-bikes and e-scooters. I think you do need to make sure that there is a serious room for local control on these, because we know they can be dangerous if they're not properly regulated. That said, I'm really hopeful that we will find compromise in the new year, because that too, it's not just a tourism issue, authorizing and legalizing e-bikes and e-scooters. It's absolutely an economic justice issue, because it's so much about the last mile. One of the challenges we've had, especially in upstate New York, is that we have aging urban cores with a lot of wealth and a lot of jobs, a donut effect, if you will. So we need to make sure that people can get to jobs. When you have the e-bikes, e-scooters, for those of us that may not be able to afford cars or don't have the transportation, that can get you to the last mile if you're riding a bus. That allows delivery workers. It allows another option for them to make a living. So we've seen some real creative opportunities with the e-bikes and e-scooters, and I would like to see us find a compromise there, recognizing the safety needs. But I'm hoping that that will be one of the first things we get done, because I think it's a positive economic development issue to create jobs.
So are there bills that have been introduced or will be introduced regarding e-bikes and 787?
Yes. The e-bikes, that legislation will come back. That will require some negotiation with the governor. The governor wants, in his veto message, he mentioned helmets. I think helmets are going to be tricky for when they are rentals, but let's hope there's ways to do this. With regard to 787, I introduced a bill a couple of weeks ago that, again, calls for that engineering study so that we can get some serious cost estimates and a variety of pieces. We may only be able to take down parts of 787. We need to reimagine it. I know decades ago there was a canal mentioned for along Broadway. Whatever we can do to strengthen walkable communities, strengthen our tourism, and make sure that we are getting people back into our urban cores. I'm open to a host of things, and hence that's what the bill is, and I'll be fighting to get some of those feasibility dollars in the budget.
New York State Assemblywoman Pat Fahey speaking with WAMC's Capital Region Bureau Chief Dave Lucas. Moving to Massachusetts, there was a historic inauguration Monday in Springfield. WAMC's Pioneer Valley Bureau Chief Paul Tuthill reports.
As the High Sheriff of Hamden County, I hereby declare that the fifth inauguration ceremony of Mayor Dominic J. Sarnoff.
Inside Majestic Symphony Hall, on the main stage with a giant American flag as a backdrop, Dominic Sarno, with his wife and two daughters standing at his side, was sworn in for a fifth term as mayor of Springfield and became the longest-serving chief executive in the city's 386-year history.
I,
Dominic J. Sarno,
do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States of America.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States of America.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. Mayor.
Sarno said when he was first elected mayor in 2007, an upset victory over then-Mayor Charlie Ryan, he never dreamed he'd go on to set a record for longevity in the office.
I may be starting to show a little bit of gray hair, but my love for this city and my love for this job burns brighter than ever before.
In his inaugural address, Sarno reflected on the last 12 years and said several success stories stood out. He cited stabilizing the city's finances during the Great Recession, improvements in the city's public schools, better public safety, and economic development projects that he claimed have resulted in 5,000 jobs.
I look forward with great enthusiasm for the next 4 years. There will both be challenges and surprises. I have every confidence that continuing to work together, we will secure a bright and vibrant future for our community.
Sarno dedicated his fifth inauguration to the memory of his mother, Clara Sarno, who died in 2018, and his 84-year-old father, Alfonso Sarno, who is battling cancer and was too ill to attend Monday's ceremony.
My parents always said they were proud of me, but the reverse is true. And I say from my heart that I am so very, very proud of them. And I'm profoundly grateful for their boundless love and support.
Sarno has never shown so much as a hint of any interest in any other office and told reporters that he expects to seek re-election in 2023.
And you never say never, but if this is the last elective office I ever hold, I'll be happy. To have the moniker of mayor can never be taken away from me. And as long as my health and my family's okay and the people of Springfield will have me, I'm honored and privileged to be mayor. I live this job, I love this job 24/7.
Also during the ceremony, oaths of office were administered to newly elected city councilors Melo Brown, Sean Curran, and Victor Davila. Later at City Hall, the City Council voted unanimously to elect Councilor Adam Gomez as Vice President and to re-elect Councilor Justin Hurst for a second one-year term as Council President. In his speech, Hurst singled out several City Councilors for their work last year on specific issues, including the approvals for the first marijuana stores in Springfield, creation of a senior tax work-off program, and toughening local hiring requirements for contractors on public construction projects.
The issues facing the city of Springfield are not that complicated, so long as you have a dedicated city council that is willing to put in the work to address those issues, which is exactly what we had last year, and I expect nothing different this year.
Also on Monday, John View was sworn in as the 41st mayor of Chicopee. Don Humison took the oath of office to become the new mayor of Westfield. Reporting from WAMC's Pioneer Valley News Bureau on the campus of Western New England University, I'm Paul Tuthill.
Also on Monday, Pittsfield Mayor Linda Tyre was sworn in for a second four-year term, leading the largest community in Berkshire County. WAMC's Berkshire Bureau Chief Josh Landis has more.
Tyre is the first mayor in the city's history to serve a four-year term. And as she took the oath of office for her second, she reflected on a life of public service.
For the past 16 years, without interruption, the people of Pittsfield have put their trust in me. First, as a city councilor, then as the city clerk, and now as mayor.
2019 ended with tension inside and outside City Hall. Tyre fended off challenger Melissa Mazzio, then an at-large city councilor, in November's contentious municipal election, while often clashing with the city council. The mayor used her address to underscore the importance of unity and inclusivity as the city swore in a new government, including the city council and school committee.
Debating issues and initiatives that are critical to our city's future may create tension. This is a natural aspect of our democracy. However, if we proceed with faith and fortitude, we will discover compromise.
After the election, Mazzio called for the first citywide recount of a mayoral race since 2009. It affirmed Tyre's win and bolstered it with two additional votes. In her thanks to City Clerk Michelle Benjamin, who ran unopposed in the November election, Tyre made reference to Mazzio's claims that the election may have been fraudulent and tampered with.
As our city clerk, your hard work and dedication reflects the commitment you have made to preserving Pittsfield's history and ensuring that elections are conducted with integrity and fairness to all.
The Democratic mayor also rolled out part of her 2020 agenda.
Rather than waiting for a corporate internet provider to invest in our future, we will take control of our own destiny. Pittsfield will explore the possibility of becoming a fiber optic internet service provider. Community-wide access to fiber optics advances our economic competitiveness and will provide enough bandwidth for businesses and residents for decades to come.
She pointed to efforts to expand outdoor recreational opportunities in Pittsfield.
The Asha-Wiltacook Rail Trail Bike Path will finally extend into Pittsfield. The historic Springside House is undergoing rebirth, bringing new opportunities to Springside Park, a natural gem in our great city. And this spring, we will see the completion of the Westside Riverway Park in the heart of the Westside.
Tyer pledged that her administration would fight blight with a series of renovations on Eleanor Road and Fort Hill Avenue. As she told WAMC after the November election, the mayor said she would revive her At Home in Pittsfield program that was rejected by the city council.
I firmly believe that small investments in exterior home improvements will give our under-resourced citizens the ability to protect their home from further decline, help build up their personal wealth, and create pride in their surroundings.
Tyer also said the city would unveil plans to redesign the Tyler Street District in the Morningside neighborhood. The mayor also plans to raise teacher salaries in the city with new state funding while increasing teacher diversity. You can hear her full remarks at WAMC.org. Reporting from the WAMC News Berkshire Bureau at the Beacon Cinema, I'm Josh Landes.
And that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Until next time, I'm Jim Lavoulis.